And today we are speaking with Suzanne Scurlock-Durana. She is the author of Reclaiming Your Body and Full Body Presence. Her Healing from the Core curriculum, combined with craniosacral therapy and other bodywork modalities, creates a complete body-centered guide to awareness, healing, and joy. She teaches around the world, just got back from London, and you can find her website at healingfromthecore.com. Welcome to the show, Suzanne.
Thank you.
Thanks for being with us today. So we're here today to talk about reclaiming your body, healing from trauma, and awakening to your body's wisdom. And as I was saying before we started recording, I don't always have a chance to read every book cover to cover, but I felt like this one was really important, and I'm so glad I took the time to read it. So thank you for writing it.
You're welcome. It was a journey, for sure.
So this is actually the first time we've had guests on the show talking about getting into their wisdom from the heart and wisdom from the gut, but you really talk about so many different parts of your body, your gut, your heart, your mind, your bones, your legs. So why do you incorporate all of those body parts?
Well, I'm a craniosacral therapist, number one. I've been doing craniosacral therapy and teaching craniosacral therapy for over 30 years. What I saw in doing that is that the body, all of the body, like every cell in your body, holds wisdom of a particular nature. And everyone is slightly different. But I discovered across the years that even though each person's system is unique, what's true is that there are certain kind of neighborhoods, if you will, in the body, like the neighborhood of the heart or the area of the gut or the feet and legs or your bones or all those different things, have their own kind of specific characteristic kind of wisdom. And I was seeing it over and over again as I was working with people, and I thought, you know what, this is really fascinating. And so I began to really play with it, and I teach it in my Healing from the Core workshops, and then I realized write about it because I've seen it so frequently with so many people that I realize that would be helped by realizing that they not only need to, but that their heart needs their gut, and the gut and the heart really need the pelvis, and the feet and legs are what propel us, you know, through into our lives and help metabolize everything that we're working with in our lives. So like every single area works with every other area of the body. And it was fascinating to watch across the years as people latched on to the heart as the seat of wisdom or the gut as the seat of the wisdom, when in fact the whole body is meant to work together. And this is actually not an idea, but the idea embodying, really being in each one of these areas is something that I haven't really seen coming from much of anywhere else.
In the book, Reclaiming Your Body, Healing from Trauma and Awakening to Your Body's Wisdom, you actually share a lot of stories about how sometimes people are really in touch with their pelvic area or really in touch with their heart, but other parts of their being are closed off, and then they get into trouble because of it. So can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, it's sort of an interesting concept because I don't think that we as human beings naturally think this way. But let's say, for instance, let's take someone who is very much a heart-centered person. They totally are inspired by life, and they love what they do, and they care about other human beings. They're very heartful people, we would say. And yet, they have a really difficult time actually following through on the things that they're really inspired to do or the places that they want to go. And if you look closely, you will often see that these people tend to say yes to too much, and they're not really listening to their gut or to their pelvis about whether they, A, have the energy to follow through on it, and B, whether it's really a good idea, this inspiration. I mean, we all have wonderful inspiration from time to time, and sometimes it's really a great idea, and sometimes it's not such a great idea, if you know what I mean. So it's something that the heart is really meant to be supported by the gut. It's really meant to be supported by the pelvis.
Beautiful. And also maybe, Suzanne, for people who aren't familiar with craniosacral therapy, maybe you can tell us a mm-hmm. little bit about what that is.
So, excuse me, craniosacral therapy is a very light touch, hands-on therapy. It originally came out of the osteopathic profession, the manual therapy of the osteopathic profession, and it's now taught to healthcare people of all different licenses. But it is a system that mobilizes the bones, the soft tissue, the membranes and fluids that surround and protect our central and peripheral nervous system, so your brain and your spinal cord. And by doing so, when there are restrictions or impediments in the way of the flow of cerebral spinal fluid and blood flow, then the nervous system doesn't operate as well. And craniosacral therapy optimizes the functioning of this core of our body. It's very, very good therapy for removing trauma of all kinds from the system.
And Suzanne, when you first started studying this from the creator of craniosacral therapy, there wasn't a lot of research on it, but this has been many, many years now. I'm wondering if you're aware of any clinical research that's been done.
You know, there has been clinical research done, and you can best find it by going to upledger.com and looking under the research on that particular website. The physician, the osteopath that taught me the work and who founded the Upledger Institute for teaching therapists all over the world is Dr. John Upledger, and the website is Upledger, UPLEDGER.com. And there are different forms of research that have been done across the years, more and more recently, and you will probably see more information there on their particular website.
Thank you, Suzanne. And in the book, you tell stories about clients that you've worked with and how you can actually feel that there was one gentleman who had a very strong heat in the front of his chest, but then you had your hand on the back of his chest and his heart area, and it was mm-hmm. cold. So I'm kind of curious about, A, how you're accessing that information, like whether this is intuitive or you can actually feel the temperature change, mm-hmm. and also what that is indicative of.
Okay. In his particular case, it was indicative of the fact that he lived with a lot of awareness in the front of his chest. He was just one of the most heartful, wonderful young men I had ever met, very inspired by his life. And when I put my hands on the front, very lightly on the front of his chest and the back of his chest, in other words, along his spine in the back, there was a significant temperature difference from front to back. And there was a felt sense of emptiness in the back and fullness in the front. And it was very, very interesting because when I asked him to tune in to the space between my two hands, before I told him what I felt, he was able to describe it himself and to say, oh, yeah, I do. I feel a lot more under your front hand. I can hardly feel your backhand, despite the fact that I was holding his backbone with exactly the same pressure that I was holding the front. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So yeah. So it sounds like he had less awareness or sensation back there.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right.
And in the beginning of your book, Reclaiming Your Body, Healing from Trauma and Awakening to Your Body's Wisdom, you have a little questionnaire that gives you a score on basically how tuned into the body a reader is. And I was surprised that, I mean, I wasn't super surprised, but I was surprised that my score was as high as it was. Mm-hmm. I think it was about 30.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's lovely.
Yeah. And it actually brings up What is the question that I had around that? I just feel like I noticed that even going through some of the exercises that you have in your book, as well as audio exercises on your website, healingfromthecore.com, when you're asking questions of like, oh, what do you feel there? And what are you sensing there? And is it a color? Is it this? What keeps coming to mind is, I don't know. So what is a person who maybe isn't as in touch supposed to do? They just practice until they start to know?
Well, what's interesting, what works best actually, if you are one of those people who is saying, I don't know. Well, you know, what do you notice in your chest? Well, I don't know. It's often not that you don't know, particularly if you got a fairly high score on the body intelligence quiz. Chances are you actually do know, but you don't know what subtle signals to be paying attention to when you drop inside. Do you understand what I'm saying with this? So oftentimes I will get someone, and it's not that often, but I will get someone in a class who will say, I have not a clue what you're asking me. And so I'll just gently sit with them and I'll say, okay, tell me if right now you drop into your chest and just notice whatever you notice here. Okay, you've done that. Thank you, Marie. Mm-hmm. And then take a moment now and drop in to your belly, like around your belly button. And notice what you notice here. Okay, now tell me, do you find one area more dense than the other?
I want to say, I don't know. I notice a difference in sensation.
Yes, but tell me about it.
But I don't know how to...
articulate it.
Yeah, I don't know what... Yeah, I couldn't draw it or describe it. I just notice it's a little bit different.
Okay. And would you say that you have more sense in your chest or your belly?
Probably my belly.
Okay. And in your belly, does it feel like it has more space or it's more tightly packed than your chest?
I feel my mind keeps saying I don't know, but I feel like it's probably more tight.
Yeah. And so just playing with that, the real piece that I'm hearing from you is that you need to get your inner critic out of the driver's seat and just let the awarenesses that you're having float to the surface. Because you're clearly having awareness. You just keep judging it and then throwing it off the bus. And so that so all you end up with is the answer, I don't know. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm. It does make sense. I feel like I don't have the connection between the sensation and the language.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually taking a mindfulness-based stress reduction class right now, MBSR. And one of the pieces of homework is to observe pleasant experiences and then to pay attention to the sensation in the body. And I noticed this on my way home from class last night. I noticed these beautiful wildflowers on the side of the road, and I noticed right away that I felt it was pleasant. But then when I tried to pay attention to the body sensation, as soon as I tried to describe it, it was like, again, I don't know, I shut down. And the sensation almost disappeared. Is that normal?
Yeah. That's actually, for being in our culture today, it's very normal. And you're not alone in that one, because most of us are trained out of giving validity or giving credence to what we feel in our bodies, what we sense in our bodies, our inner imagery, if you will. Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, hopefully with practice, it will come. Now, Suzanne, again, we are speaking with Suzanne Scurlock-Durana. She is the author of Full Body Presence, and the book we're talking about today is Reclaiming Your Body, Healing from Trauma and Awakening to Your Body's Wisdom.
Mint Records and CITR and Discorder present Edmonton's indie psych favorite, Faith Healer. It's their first time in Vancouver, so let's show some Van City love on Saturday, March 3rd at the Astoria, with special guests Local Fuzz Poppers Supermoon and Ellen Noon from Victoria.
The AIDS Vancouver Helpline is here to help. Open from 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, the Helpline answers questions about HIV and safer sex. Call to find medical support in your area without giving your name. Run by volunteers, the Helpline is one of the many programs from AIDS Vancouver combating the HIV epidemic in the Lower Mainland. While not medical professionals, our volunteers answer your questions confidentially and anonymously. The Helpline number is 604-696-4666 or contact us at aidsvancouver.org.
We are speaking with Suzanne Scurlock-Durana. She is the author of Full Body Presence, and the book we're talking about today is Reclaiming Your Body, Healing from Trauma and Awakening to Your Body's Wisdom. And Suzanne, you share a number of stories about your own personal experience growing up and how you became disconnected, because when we're kids, we're kind of quite fully connected to our mm-hmm. bodies and to our yeah. emotions, and through our family unit and through society, we're taught to shut them down. And there was this one story you shared about this dog who came into your life. Mm-hmm. And could you share a little bit about that experience with us?
You know, that is one of my clearest memories of my childhood. And it was so fascinating to me that I was just hanging out in my front yard, and I might have been 4, maybe. I mean, I was very young. And this gorgeous golden, I want to say it had to have been a golden retriever, but it was a young dog, came into the yard right up to me. We just sat, and the connection we made was phenomenal. And I had never had a dog. We didn't have a dog in the household growing up. There was just something about this dog that we absolutely were just super connected. We played, we rolled, we, you know, just were very, very connected. He would look at me and I would look back at him, and he'd just sit there with me like I was his new best friend. Mm-hmm. And so I was so excited, and went into the house with the dog and said to my mom and dad, "This is my new dog, and I just really love this dog." And of course, they were normal parents. They said, "Well, this dog must belong to somebody, and there's no way we can keep it." And I was stunned. I think it was before the point where I was actually developing logical thought. And so I must have been fairly young, like maybe 4. I was absolutely devastated. I mean, I could not believe that they couldn't see how deeply connected we were. And I think this level of connection is something that children naturally have if they don't have any early trauma that really locks them out of their sensations. I think this is a normal thing for children to have. And I had it. But the message that I got was that it did not matter how deeply connected we were, that level of heart connection wasn't as important as finding this dog's original owner. And I never saw the dog again. And I was really, I was very, very saddened by it. I must have cried for hours. I was just really upset. And, you can look at that as an adult. You know, here we are from our perspective today, and you say, well, that wasn't really a trauma, Suzanne. But in fact, it was a way in which my system began to shut down deeper feelings. And believe me, I actually had very good parents, so it wasn't as though there was anything terrible that they had done. It was just the way in which it happened and the abruptness with which it happened, and their not being able to see or understand where I was coming from at that time. And being a parent myself now, I recognize, having parented two now adult children, all the mistakes I made, just like my parents did. And, you know, and I just say prayers for my kids to grow beyond whatever it was that I might have done. But there is a quality in our culture today that, and in the culture that I grew up in, that said feelings are really secondary to what you think and what you do. Yeah.
Interesting. As you were sharing so many of these stories, and that was just one of the stories that I deeply connected with, I kind of gained a bit of an insight into my own experience. I've noticed that ever since a fairly young age, the concept of death, not that losing a loved one doesn't affect me, because of course it does, but that logical part of my mind always steps in and says, well, that's just part of life. Suck it up, basically.
Right up, right,
You know, and I remember actually when I was quite young, a friend of my mother's had been murdered. As I was reading your book, I remembered my mother telling me this and telling me some of her feelings about it, and I saying at quite a young age, maybe 10 or 12 years old, well, she wasn't a very nice person, and so get over it, was basically my attitude. And I'm like, well, looking back, thinking about how my mother must have felt and how disconnected I was from the fact that this person no longer existed on the planet anymore.
Yeah.
And how disconnected I was emotionally from, well, she's not here anymore, so just let it go.
Yeah. Yeah. And there it also could be that it was a defense on your part because you had no clue what to say. And it might not really have been appropriate for your mother to have shared at the depth that she did with a 10 or 12-year-old. Do you understand what I'm saying? You know, when you look at the whole picture, we don't know what was true for you in terms of what was going on there around that. Did you not like this lady? I'm just curious.
Well, I grew up in foster care, so I didn't live with my mother. But this woman was someone that my mother had tried to help, and she was... you know, she had mental health challenges of her own, and she was one of these people who you could never do enough for. She needed people very much, but she never really appreciated them.
Yeah.
And her body was found somewhere in her neighborhood, and what likely happened is that she picked a fight with the wrong person on the street.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, I mean, she was deeply troubled, and my mother... was trying to help her. So in my mind, I'd heard of all the horrible things she'd done to my mother, and I was kind of like, well, good riddance.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, so in a way, you were in your own nice, clear, black and white 12-year-old way, being very concrete and saying, Mom, you know, get over her. She wasn't a very nice person to you. You're actually going to be better off without her.
But I mean, she's still like, the poor woman, her body was left in the street. You know what I mean? Like, this is a pretty big deal.
Oh, yeah. But you don't, at 10 or 12, you have no way to put that into any context. Do you understand what I'm saying? So don't be too judgmental about your response to your mother. I mean, it could very well be that you really did the best you could in how you responded to your mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So this was your mom in foster care?
This is my birth mother.
Ah, okay.
We still had contact, but we didn't live together. Yeah. I was just thinking, because of all the trauma of being taken away at such a young age and all of that, and having to get over not having that person physically in my life anymore.
Yeah,
I think that's where that disconnection with death of like, well, that life happens. And it wasn't like it changed my feelings about it, but that running commentary in my mind was, get over it. It happens.
Right, right. And it also sounds as though you had some really tough experiences earlier than that would have really caused you to put up some walls that you might not have otherwise have had if you were put into foster care. That must have not been an easy thing for you growing up. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, back to, I don't want to talk too much about my own personal thing, but another thing that came up actually when I think it was the gut, trusting the gut.
Uh-huh.
What happens with so many of us, and there was another experience that you shared in your teen years where yeah. your gut really warned you about something, and then in your mind, because the logical information you had on the surface was, mm-hmm. oh, you have no reason to feel unsafe.
Right.
And
right.
I think that happens with a lot of situations or people. Like there are people who I feel in my gut, I don't know if I can trust them, but mm-hmm. then my mind clicks in and says, okay, well, this could be because of past trauma, or this could be because of these other things. And
right.
so how do you take your, because you don't want to let your mind completely, you don't want to abandon your brain.
Right. Yeah. No, not at all. But the issue is that you want to have what I call an educated gut. You want an integrated gut. So let's take my particular circumstance where I was with an old friend. I mean, he was really like an older brother to me. And he was coming off of a long stint on amphetamines. And in that process, he got very violent and strangled me. And the interesting piece was that for about 20 to 30 minutes before this occurred, my gut felt uneasy sitting in the car in the parking lot of this pool party chatting with him. And yet there was nothing in the tone of his voice. There was nothing in what we were talking about. There was nothing that would say, you know, Suzanne, you're in danger. Get out of the car. You know, he was a friend. I was trying to be nice. You know, all of those things that we do, be polite. And I was, I was a good friend. Good friends don't, you know, just get up and walk away from somebody because they feel uneasy. So my head talked my gut out of leaving, and I almost died in the process. And in my first book, Full Body Presence, Learning to Listen to Your Body's Wisdom, I talk about the fact that in the months and years that passed just beyond that trauma at 17, I made a vow to my gut that I would never dismiss it again for any reason. And it saved me from a date rape in college because mm-hmm. I listened to it. But I didn't know to listen to it as a young and naive 17-year-old. So you know what I'm saying is that there are layers and layers of how we can listen and pay attention, and the different traumas that have happened to us literally lock us out of the wisdom of the body often, because things get kind of clamped down and tightened down in certain areas of the body with trauma, so that we don't hear what's going on.
So, Suzanne, I'm curious, because when you're dealing with, I mean, one of the things that I've been working on in therapy is sometimes I'll have an urge to flee a situation. Mm-hmm. And yet I need to be skillful. Like if I'm at work and I'm having something comes up that triggers me for whatever reason, I can't just quit my job.
Right.
In the middle. Right. So I have to learn how to attend to my feelings and deal with these external circumstances. So if you had that to do over again with your friend in the car that night, mm-hmm. yeah. how might you have dealt with all of that?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the thing that I did do, I'll tell you what I did do in the circumstance that happened after that in college. I was on a date in my college with a very popular basketball player. And we were in a party in somebody's dorm room. Everybody was drinking beer and, you know, we're all sitting around chatting and music was on. And one by one, people were leaving. And I realized that very, very shortly, he and I were going to be the last two people in the room. And I began to feel very uneasy. And so what I did was I said, I need to go to the bathroom, and I left. And I didn't go back. And very shortly thereafter, I heard from two different women on campus that he had date raped them.
Wow.
And so it you know, can I say for sure that that would have happened to me? No. What I can tell you is that it didn't happen to me. So that was a time when I could have said, oh, he's such a popular guy, la, 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 la. I didn't. There wasn't anything about him that was mean or terrible. He was just very self-centered and strong-willed, and as most popular athletes are or were at that point in time. And so I got it, that I needed to get out of there. Something didn't feel right. And so I left. But that's a little different, Marie, than what happens when you have memories of past trauma that are causing little triggers to go off, but when there's actually nothing in your current environment that's dangerous. Okay? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely. And people okay. who have trauma, how do we determine the difference?
Well, I'll tell you, there actually is a difference, but it does require doing some internal work, and it sounds like you're doing good therapy work, but working with some of the exercises in my book, particularly explorations 2 and 3, would probably help you to start to embody, you know, to have that core embodiment more fully in these different areas of your body so that you really could hear the signals. Because, for instance, when I felt that sense that night that I was on that date that where I was in trouble, I had just a clear no charge. There was just a sense of get up and leave. Just leave and leave now. No charge. There wasn't a panicked feeling. I just knew that I needed to leave. Now, that's different than the couple of years after that original strangulation happened, where I would get into the car with my father at night, or I would be alone with my boyfriend of the time. Kind people, good men. And I would get an irrational fear that would start to rise in me. But it was based on being alone with a man, based on that past experience with the man that strangled me, the old friend that strangled me. So it was like a worry coming from my head about something old, as opposed to something current that was going on. Now, what I had to do was I had to heal the trauma in my gut and my heart enough to be able to hear it again so that I could assess whether something was a current issue or it was coming from worry, old worries. Do you understand the difference?
Yes, and I'm thinking, and this is not the first time I've had to learn this and remember, but I think that when it's the past trauma stuff, it tends to feel very urgent. I have mm-hmm. to take action right now.
It's panic. Yeah, it's almost a panic. Yeah.
Which you would think that would mean it was more real, mm-hmm. but when it is something that's current, it tends to be a more subtle, calm mm-hmm. knowing.
Right. Exactly. Yes.
And just to clarify, you mentioned that I might benefit from explorations 2 and 3. So that is exploration 2 is the core embodiment process.
Yes.
Nourishing
yes.
and replenishing the container of your being.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm looking for exploration 3 is healing the internal resistance to life.
Yes. Yes. And so when you think about it, one of the things that most people in today's world don't have is a good sense of core embodiment. We're very good at knowing what we think. We can feel certain areas of our body, or if we're very heartful, or, you know, if we have certain things that we have cultivated within ourselves. However, most of us don't start out living as adults in the current culture much below our necks. We're a very heady culture. And so most of the time when we get panicked or scared, it's a thought about something that's happened in our past that causes the alarm bells to go off, your gut to clench, your heart to race, and that feeling like, oh, man, I got to get out of here now. That actually is a very clear signal that you need to sit down and breathe and get your core embodiment back and actually look at what's going on in that moment, as opposed to the mind's way of saying, oh, this looks familiar and I know I must be in danger again.
But we're so used to that. And Suzanne, when you're talking about the difference between what happened that night in the car with your friend and then the potential date rape situation, one of the problems is we know in hindsight, I should have followed my gut because that thing happened. Yeah. But if you listen to your gut and you leave, you don't know for sure that that would have happened.
You know, it's a very interesting piece about this, Marie, because I have probably asked a couple thousand people in my classes, how many of you have ever had a circumstance where you got a gut instinct about something and you didn't act on it and something bad happened and you knew you should have? And everybody raises their hands. And I'll say, okay, how many of you have actually had a gut instinct and then listened to it and found out later that something bad happened that probably would have happened to you had you not listened? Again, 3/4 of the room goes up. Then the other thing that happens, see, because the gut isn't just about danger. The gut is a sense, it gives us a very clear sense of when something is right for us, as well as when something is off. And the heart math people, I don't know if you're familiar with heart math, and they're out of, I love their work. And they have done some recent research that shows that the viscera of the torso, probably talking gut and heart, register when things are coming in the environment before you can see it, hear it, smell it, or have any forewarning of it. The body somehow knows that something is coming. And they've done research that shows that you're registering that something is coming before you even know it at a mental level. So there is a knowing in our gut, in our heart, in our viscera that is beyond a logical explanation. And that's what I'm talking about tuning into in the at that gut level.
That brings up, Suzanne, I think the difference between when animals know that a natural disaster is coming and they move to higher ground.
Yep.
And because I've sensed it where there's only really one clear memory of this, where we were walking down the street and I said to my friends, I can feel a storm coming. Mm-hmm. And they were like, what are you talking about? It's beautiful out. But I just could feel, I guess, the electricity in the air or the change in air pressure. Mm-hmm. And I could sense it. And a storm did come. And that's probably some of the same kind of thing that animals are picking up on.
Absolutely.
And because because looking at the situation with our eyes and our ears, it didn't appear that a storm was coming.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So you do have that part of your system is alive and well and was registering for you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Suzanne, there was an interesting part of your book. It might have been in the gut area or the heart area, where sometimes what will happen is we'll have some kind of inner knowing or some kind of body sense that we should do something, and then we get up in our head and force it to happen and tune out of all the other, because moment to moment our body is giving us new information.
That's right.
And there was a situation where some clients or friends of yours had decided to move somewhere and they just went full steam ahead and pushed it into happening, and of course it didn't work out the way they wanted. So can you say more about how we tend to do that?
Well, if you think about the fact that we are a very heady culture, and we do tend to take, even if we're tuned into certain areas of our body and we get hits about, well, that's great, or that's not right, or whatever, the tendency is to take that momentary sense of, oh, that's just delicious and wonderful, and I need to act on it. And it's like we run off to our heads with it, and we make up stories about what we need to do, and we completely leave our gut, when the gut may be actually saying to you, well, that's nice, but let's just see how this plays out. Let's give it a little while longer. And that's where it is important to continue to stay connected to your gut, to your heart, to your bones, to your feet and legs, day in and day out. And all of these areas of the body, all of these areas, are now being found to have incredible information that they offer to the brain all the time. And then from that brain connection to the body, very wise decisions can be made, as opposed to decisions that were only made from your head, or decisions that are only made from one part of your body, like a decision made only from your heart, or only from your gut, or only, you know, we're not meant to do this piecemeal. We're actually meant to have an integrated full body wisdom. And that's really the thing that that's my soapbox. You know, it's, let's get into the entire body. You know, I love what heart math teaches about the heart and about the wisdom of the heart. But then I will always say to them, what about the gut? What about the feet and legs? What about our bones? What about the pelvis? You know, these are all additional areas that have a voice that needs to be heard at the table of our decision-making process.
Well, and that situation, Suzanne, where we get that initial feeling and then we push forward.
Yeah.
I think that's another piece where people can use that as evidence. Well, I followed my gut in that situation. It didn't work out. So that must mean I can't trust my gut.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. And that is often how people discount their inner knowing. And the more you discount your inner knowing, the quieter and quieter that voice, that inner voice gets, until sometimes it gets down to being completely muted. Yeah. Which is very sad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we are speaking right now with Suzanne Scurlock-Durana. She is the author of Reclaiming Your Body.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Monday.
From 1 to 3 p.m.
Who is this guy? Does he have a name? Let me know where he's from.
From parts unknown.
My name's Chris Horrific.
We always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is without question the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it Monday
from 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Break your fingers.
We don't need to tell you that Vancouver has a housing problem.
Mass evictions.
Mass rent evictions.
Unfair rent increases.
What happened to rent control and protection from unfair eviction?
If these or other housing matters concern you, you may be interested in joining the Vancouver Tenants Union. For more information, visit tenantsunion.ca.
We are speaking right now with Suzanne Scurlock-Durana. She is the author of Reclaiming Your Body, Healing from Trauma and Awakening to Your Body's Wisdom. You can find her website at healingfromthecore.com. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the craniosacral therapy. Am I saying that right?
Yes.
How do you find, because it seems like the exercises in the book are one level, which you can do on your own and is amazing. And it also sounds like if you want to take it to the next level, it may require some help.
Yeah.
So how do you find someone to help with that?
Well, I would say that the best way to find a really good craniosacral therapist would be to go to the website I spoke about earlier at www.upledger.com, UPLEDGER.com, and pull up the Find a Practitioner page, put your zip code in or your city, and look who is on that list, who has the most classes, the most certifications, and see. And you can call and talk to people who are on that list and see what kind of feeling you get in speaking with them. Because the training that the UpLedger Institute gives to therapists is probably the gold standard, if you will, in the business. And so people who have had many more trainings and who are certified either at the techniques level or at the diplomate level, that would be someone that you could trust. The same is also true. Like it is really a lot alike what happens when you're looking for a good massage therapist or an acupuncturist or a psychotherapist, where you will maybe look them up online, but you'll also talk to your friends. And people, if people have had really good experiences with a particular therapist, that's always a good sign that they are someone that is working ethically and with a good skill set and a good skill level to be able to hold a space for your healing process. I get regular craniosacral therapy myself to this day, Marie, because I have found that no matter who you are and no matter how long you've been working, life continues to give you things that are challenging. And it can be very, very helpful to have a facilitated session with someone else who has their hands on you in a nurturing, non-invasive way, helping you listen to your own tissue and your own wisdom and releasing the impediments that might be in the way of you being able to hear that wisdom.
Thank you. And you're also doing a retreat or something in California.
Yes.
Did you want to share a bit about that?
Yes. And actually that will be up online very, very shortly. I teach at Esalen Institute every summer. And Esalen is having a bit of a challenging time right now because the road to the north and the road to the south is blocked. And so my workshops have moved to a new retreat center that's just opened called 1440, which stands for the number of minutes in the day. It's called 1440 Multiversity. And there are all kinds of really excellent self-help, inner exploration, meditation, yoga, all kinds of things happen at 1440. And I'll be there from August 27th through September 4th, through the Labor Day weekend, doing two different classes that will be the material that's in my first and my second book.
Beautiful. And again, the website is healingfromthecore.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine you could probably get on a mailing list somehow for that.
Yes. Yes, you can absolutely do that. And I think there's even a free gift for doing it if you come to my website.
Free gifts are good.
Yes.
Again, we are speaking with Suzanne Scurlock-Durana. She is the author of Reclaiming Your Body, Healing from Trauma, and Awakening to Your Body's Wisdom. And I think we could all do with a little dose of our own body's wisdom a little bit more. We have just a few minutes left in the show, Suzanne, so I'm wondering where you want to take this conversation.
Yeah. You know, I think, Marie, that one of the most important things for us as human beings is to begin to learn how to my old friend Emily Conrad used to call self-reference, meaning how to drop inside, really listen internally, and establish, cultivate a real friendship between your conscious awareness, the soul level of who you are, and your physical body. Because the physical body is I think of it as the car we've been given to drive through life with. And if we don't have a friendly relationship with our physical body, it begins to cause problems from a very young age. And we see it in many, many different ways and many different levels throughout life. Yeah.
That brings up, Suzanne, I'm just wondering for listeners who have children, have young children, how maybe we can learn from the children in our lives and also to to foster and help children to keep that wisdom.
Absolutely. And I think that I did my best with my kids. I certainly did not do a perfect job. But, you know, particularly as they grew up, I encouraged them to follow the things that were their gifts, their particular unique gifts. I also taught them how to notice and feel what was going on in their body in any given moment, like to really trust their gut, to notice what they were was happening at a heart level, to pay attention to the inner conversations that were going on for them, so that they could find the ways and the path that was really best for them in any given moment. And children, if we help them to grow up that way, then they arrive in adulthood with more of themselves intact, so that they have a little bit easier time finding their way in the world. And this is a very challenging world that we're living in at the moment. So it definitely requires all of us to have that core embodiment, to have our inner wisdom on board and talking to us all the time. Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, there's so many more questions that I have, but we're running short on time. Yeah, I really appreciate that you've taken the time to speak with us today, Suzanne, and that you're sharing the work that you're doing, and you've been doing it for so many years. I'm wondering what else you'd like to, if there's one thing that you really want listeners to take home today, what might that be?
Well, you know, I would love to perhaps read, it's probably one of my favorite phrases in the book, if I could.
Absolutely.
It's right in the beginning. It says, the headline of it is the most important relationship in your life. Your relationships with other people throughout your life, with your parents, spouses, children, friends, and teachers, will shift as time passes and situations change. As long as you are alive, however, your body is always with you. It's so beneficial to have a strong, deep, intimate relationship with your own unique physical self. Your body is designed to guide you, keep you safe, and bring you full vitality and pleasure. It is the vehicle through which you create and manifest your thoughts and dreams into reality. In this book, you will discover how establishing and nurturing a healthy relationship with your body will allow you to reclaim lost parts of yourself, tap into your body's wisdom, and better navigate your life.
That's beautiful. Thank you, Suzanne. And there's also I believe it's a 28-day program at the end of journaling and listening to the recordings. And there was one spot, I'm trying to find the exact, I highlighted it. There it is. Okay. It's on page 112, which is under, again, your gut. When an answer does not come or remains foggy, it means that it's probably premature to make a decision. It means that I need to stay present in the moment and not go running out into the future trying to make the decision logically when that is not what is called for.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And it's so hard for most of us to do that, to really trust that we need to just stay with something and listen a little longer until we get a clear signal about which direction to take it.
And then you've mentioned in the book that some decisions you made immediately in an instant.
Right.
And others took years to unfold. So I guess it's just kind of live and learn and practice.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it really is. And the interesting piece is the longer you practice listening to your body and taking actions on it, and I'm talking about everything from what would be nurturing and nourishing for me in terms of the food that I want to eat at my next meal, or who would I want to spend time with in this downtime that I have where I really need to rest and rejuvenate, you know, all the way to who should I marry, or what should I do about this career change? Every single decision, the body's wisdom has some very clear things to say about it when the time is right for the decision to be made.
Beautiful. Well, it sounds like maybe you've got your next interview calling you.
For your help with this, I really have enjoyed this interview.
So that was Suzanne Scurlock-Durana. She is the author of Reclaiming Your Body, Healing from Trauma and Awakening to Your Body's Wisdom. And you can find her at healingfromthecore.com if you want to connect with her and get on her mailing list. There's also a free gift there if you sign up for her mailing list, and lots of resources and information. So thank you so much to Suzanne for being with us today, and thank you for taking the time out of your day to focus on your own healing and inner knowing. So thank you so much. I want to send you lots of love for a wonderful day and a wonderful week. Be well. Namaste. Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
I faced it. I have Alzheimer's disease.
My diagnosis has let me get on with my life my way.
The more we learned about my grandfather's dementia, the more we could face the future and make plans.
My husband Tom and I spoke to our doctor right away.
I have Alzheimer's, but it doesn't have me.
I faced it. So can you.
For more information about early diagnosis, visit alzheimer.ca.
Ocean, border, sub, urban, dispersal, determinacy, mulatto, mestizo, Métis, Cabra, Eurasian, Creole, colored, colored, split. Those who have no history are doomed.
An excerpt from The Reinventing Wheel, spoken by author, Vancouver poet, Wade Compton. Celebrate Black History Month with CITR 101.9 FM as we host content exploring Black history in Vancouver and beyond. Tune in this February and check out CITR.ca for regular updates on the scheduling of our Black History Month programming.
BC government now covers medications that could reduce your chances of contracting HIV by 90%. PrEP stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis and is a preventative measure that HIV-negative folks can take to reduce their risk of becoming positive. Health Initiative for Men suggests that if you have had sex with a partner with HIV, have had a recent STI, have multiple sexual partners, have a history of inconsistent or no condom use, are currently involved in sex work, or have had repeated courses of post-exposure prophylaxis, then you might want to think about looking into PrEP measures. CITR and Discorder are not medical professionals. Please refer to your doctor for more information.
What newspapers and magazines did you regularly read to stay informed and to understand the
world?
I've
read most of them, again, with a great appreciation for the press, for the media.
But like, what ones specifically?
All of them.
Want to know more than Sarah Palin? Join CITR's Current Affairs Coordinator, Alex DeBoer, every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. in room 2514 in the AMS Nest to learn best practices for covering local current affairs topics for radio. The weekly training sessions will cover writing for radio, determining newsworthiness, media ethics, interviewing, writing balanced stories, and more.
The Canadian Foundation for Cross-Cultural Dialogue proudly introduces its new project, Baldwin and La Fontaine, Towards Responsible Government. With your family, friends, and classmates, learn more about the role played by those important figures in shaping Canadian government as we know it today. Visit baldwinlafontaine.ca to discover clips, documentaries, and a teaching guide. Enter the National Web Contest for a chance to win a trip for two to Toronto or a post-secondary scholarship.
Unearthing the depths of contemporary cassettes and vinyl undergrounds, ranging from DIY bedroom pop and garage rock all the way to harsh noise and, of course, drone. Pop Drone, every Wednesday at 10 to 11:30 a.m. at CITR 101.9 FM.
My advice to young girls would be, go home after school.
You're listening to the Parts Unknown show on 101.9 CITR.